Something is happening in Iran. As a matter of fact, Iran apparently guided the CIA's lost stealth drone to an intact landing inside hostile territory by exploiting a navigational weakness long known to the U.S. military. Now, this according to an Iranian engineer now working on the captured drone systems inside Iran. Iranian electronic warfare specialists were able to cut off communication links of the American Batwing RQ-170 Sentinel, using knowledge gleaned from previous downed American drones and a technique claimed by Iranian commanders in September. The Iranian specialists then reconfigured the drone's GPS coordinates to make it land in Iran at what the drone thought was its actual home base in Afghanistan. In a moment, we'll be talking with Andrew Kalerik about this story and some other stories about Iran and possibly Venezuela trying to hack their way into our power plants. Well, for almost more years than I can count, Andrew Kalerik has been utilizing computerized information systems with a few objectives: mastering the technology, helping others make the very best use of their systems, and preparing organizations for the true future. As a consultant, author, inventor, researcher, his goal is a simple one: to help you secure your information systems through special planning. He has 5 degrees, including a doctorate in information system security and an MBA. In addition to that, he has published multiple security books and publications in the areas of cyber terrorism, information warfare, and cyber security. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Andrew, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Wonderful. George, how are you tonight?
Good, good. First of all, let me ask you about the drone that Iran now claims they hijacked and that their engineers were able to tap into the system and get it fixed and changed, and they brought it down. Now, I know something's weird about this, Andrew, because when I saw the pictures of the drone on display, it didn't crash. It didn't look like something that had been damaged. It looked like whatever it was simply came down. Is that the case?
Well, I obviously I'm not in Iran to examine it, but essentially what they did, from my understanding, is they jammed the GPS. So they basically told the drone to fly into their airspace, into the location, and they may or may not at that point been able to just kind of force it down without any damage.
If they did that, what does that tell us about the Iranian technology and sophistication?
Well, I think, you know, that the Iranians, they're progressing. I mean, they do have a cyber war division. They are engaged in electronic warfare on a defense level for missiles attacking them and so forth. I believe they have some pretty sophisticated relationships with some of our larger competitors, so the technologies are accessible to them. I don't think that if we were to go into any kind of a serious theater of war with them, that it would be a major problem. But on these individual cases, they can create all kinds of little troubles for us.
Will they be able to technologically duplicate the drone now and make one themselves?
Well, there's several components. The first is the electronics. So they're going to have a real good idea of what type of electronics we're using to remote control them for range and distance and controls. The second component of that is actually the composite polymer. The reason those drones work as well as they are and they're in a stealth mode is because of the construction materials. Now, that's a little harder to reverse engineer. So I suspect that they'll more likely share that information with one of our larger competitors and then acquire it in that fashion.
Ah. How did they even know the drone was there? I mean, did they spot it, do you think?
Well, if somebody sees, a drone flying, 1,000 feet above, you can hear these things. They're not, super silent. People talk. Perhaps this is one of many reconnaissance that occurred in that region. They could have even baited the incident. Maybe they provided something for our defense forces to go after. So they may have even set the stage to capture it. It's hard to say. I mean, it's all hearsay. nobody really knows what happened except those on the ground.
Andrew, the story I had at the top of the hour basically says that the military here in the United States, they're aware of the weakness of the navigation system. That's kind of serious, isn't it?
Well, anything that is wireless has inherent weakness. You know, the notion of wireless security is an oxymoron. The fact is you have communication that has to be established between the two points, and that happens in the open air. And if you can capture that transaction or that series of transactions, or worse, be in the middle and act as a man in the middle, which is a standard old type of wireless attack, you can actually hijack just about anything. And now that they have the drone, if they can deduce those codes, then they could literally hijack future ones. So I suspect right now that our engineers are swapping out some of those chips, reassessing the codes and the command structure and so forth, so on, so that it doesn't happen in the future.
And I would assume the Russians and the Chinese, as I think you alluded to, would love to get their hands on this stuff.
I think a lot of countries would like to get their hands on it. So, you know, when our president asked, well, will you give it back?
Yeah.
I think that was probably the silliest notion I've heard in a long time. They're not giving it back. They're going to exploit this for everything. I mean, what people fail to remember is Iran declared war on the United States in 1979.
That's right.
That hasn't changed.
That's right.
We haven't declared war back, but they're in a state of war against us. And so they don't care about the rules, and they don't care about the conduct and the whole issue. So they're going to milk this for everything they can get.
When they had this thing on display, we should have sent a drone over there to blow it up.
Well, I'm told that that was an option, and somebody in the chain of command decided that wasn't going to happen, which I think somebody should be held accountable.
I think so, too. I think that's the one thing they should have done. Andrew, we're going to talk more when we come back from the break, but the U.S. officials are investigating reports now that apparently Iranian and Venezuelan diplomats in Mexico might have been involved in planned cyber attacks against U.S. targets, including nuclear power plants as well. How serious is this story?
It's a very serious story. And believe it or not, I mean, I don't know if you recall, but almost 6 years ago, I said on your program on Coast to Coast, this is what these countries are trying to do.
Yes, absolutely. And they're doing their thing. Is it easy or is it difficult to hack like that?
It's getting easier.
Not good.
Not good at all.
Basically, what would they do? They tap into the system and try to shut it down? And I think we and the Israelis did the same thing to the Iranians, didn't we?
Well, I believe, I'm not so sure that it was the U.S. that actually did it, but I think probably the Israelis had a hand in it, though, again, there's no way to prove it. But there's a lot of different ways that you can attack a country electronically, and it really depends on what it is you're after. If you're looking to disable things, then you just overwhelm the system. And effectively, that would be like a form of jamming. And you just literally, it's 1,000 people talking to one at the same time. It just shuts down. Other venues are, you know, are they after intelligence? Are they after identification? You know, the U.S. border with Mexico is very porous. And if you've got, you know, what looks like legitimate identification, you can cross that. So that's another thing. Then there's intelligence gathering.
And hold on for a second, Andrew, because when we come back, I want to find out from you just why this is such a big deal, because it really is. And then we'll talk more about cyber attacks. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And you can be a Coast Insider. That's right, part of the club, the Coast Insiders Club, for less than 25 cents a day. Take advantage of downloading, podcasting, video chats, regular chats, and you can pick up 1,000 past programs now and keep them, store them away. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. At the top of the page, it says Coast Insider. You'll join the club and find out why so many people are. Our goal, 2,000 in the month of December, and I think we're getting really close to that already. So go ahead and become a member of the Coast Insiders Club. And we'll be back with more with Andrew Kolarik as we talk about cyber attacks on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Andrew Kolarik with us for the first hour and a half here now as we talk about cyber attacks and technology as well. Why is this story such a big story, Andrew, with these coming cyber war that you have written about?
Well, you know, everything we do in our economy, in our personal lives, government, everything is run on cyber power without any exceptions at this point. If you were to no longer have access to your mobile phone, your email, I think people would be checking into the hospital. Okay, through withdrawals.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
They would be rioting. Okay, I was in a hotel once, and the internet went down, and people were throwing things at the counter clerks. Okay, it's just you know, we're so dependent on it now, socially and financially, economically, politically. We don't have the patience to wait for the newspaper. That's why we now go online.
That's true.
But it's not just that aspect, just the whole range and reach is facilitated through this whole digital communications infrastructure. And it's not just by a state by state or the country, but it's global, okay? I mean, I can talk to almost anybody anywhere in the world at a moment's notice. And people don't realize how addictive that really can be. So, you know, if you look at it that way, you know, it's super critical to just our daily lives. But now let's look at it in the larger context. A couple months ago, McKinsey came out with a report that estimated the internet economy at about $14 trillion globally.
Huge.
$8 trillion. And the U.S. economy is $14 trillion, okay? And the world GDP is about $35 trillion or so. So, I mean, these are huge numbers, and it's a large component of what's going on. Now, here's the even more important aspect. Over a five-year period, the same study showed that the growth of the Western world that has the internet in its infrastructure grew on average over a five-year period 20%. Now, if you look at the rate of growth that countries are not experiencing right now, that means all our growth is coming from the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, and if you really want to damage a country, then you undermine that infrastructure. So, you know, what would happen if the whole internet communications infrastructure was no longer stable or reliable?
Everything collapses.
Yeah. I mean,
banking, stores, everything collapses.
How about simple logistics, shipping something from point A to point B, ordering something from somebody? You might actually have to send a letter to get something.
And it's cheaper than sending an army to some other country.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's really why countries are really looking to undermine this whole infrastructure. They can beat us at our own game. It's one of our strongest assets. It's also one of our greatest weaknesses.
And can we stop this? And tell us about this Iranian-Venezuelan tie-in. What is this story, Andrew?
Well, there was some video of some ambassadors down in Mexico from Iran and Venezuela trying to arrange a hacker team with some students to attack the U.S. And so I believe one of the professors went in with another student and recorded these conversations and then forwarded it to the authorities, and there was an arrest and so forth. And basically, they have these guys on film saying, oh, yeah, let's go after the power plant and the nuclear this and the, you know, I haven't seen the video itself, but it's pretty compelling evidence that, you know, Iran, Venezuela, and there's even an implication of Cuba have been doing this type of thing from the jurisdiction of Mexico. Now, two things come from this. Now, remember, 6 years ago, I said, hey, Iran, Venezuela, all these other countries, they're attacking us on a daily basis, mm-hmm. okay? And I produced some reports for you guys and so forth. And I wrote about it and published it. Well, somebody must have taken that seriously because now they can't do it from their host country. So now they're using proxies. So they're coming to Mexico. They may go to Canada. They may go to Puerto Rico or some, you know, the Virgin Islands, somewhere that it has a direct pipeline into this infrastructure. And when you have proximity, it makes it enormously more easy to do these attacks.
This is an amazing story. And once you're into the system, do we know where it's coming from? If somebody's in there trying to hit this attack?
Well, there's ways of tracking it, and you know, parts of the military infrastructure now have systems that monitor intrusions and activities and so forth. But the reality is, if you're actually going to engage in a disabling attack, it once it happens, it's too late. Okay, finding out who did it, they're long gone. You know, some intelligence sharing has now occurred where, you know, you can get a faster response. But the foundation of the process to find these guys hasn't changed. And a lot of this stuff, you release a really strong worm into our system, and it'll take you quite a while to find where it came from, and then you may not know who actually released it or who created it, and then the speculation starts. The complexity to these systems, and it's such a distributed system, to backtrack through it takes a long time.
It does. And I have to assume, though, Andrew, we're doing the same thing right now to other countries. We've got probably a huge cyber attack division somewhere at the Pentagon, and they're working away.
Well, the Pentagon has created a cyber command center. They have recruited cyber warriors. I mean, the Air Force had a really great ad saying, you know, come be with us on this. And the other branches of the government are hiring very talented hackers and making them part of their investigative teams and so forth. So the efforts that I started about 6 years ago are starting to bear fruit, and you know, people are starting to be aware of the problem. But that's only compounding the problem because we don't really have any kind of a holistic approach to this. It's all piecemeal. It's this department is doing it, this thing, this government branch is doing that thing, this organization or corporation is developing that thing, and it's left to whoever to piece it all together, and then it's not a complete package, and it's not integrated, and so forth. So the efforts are being made. The progress is moving forward, but it's a continual game of one-upsmanship. We develop a defense. Somebody figures out a way around it. We develop a new defense, and so forth and so on.
Let's talk a little bit about identity theft, Andrew, and how big a picture is this?
Well, probably 15, 20 million people in the U.S. have some form of identity theft in the last couple years. It's a common occurrence. For a while there, every couple months, there was a major story, you know, like the veterans or, you know, TJ Maxx or whoever would lose Social Security numbers, Visa credit card information, you know, et cetera, phone numbers. You create enough of this information and then steal it. you can then create identities. You can then take those identities and create driver's license, credit cards, passports. Now, the passport process is a little more rigid, but you can still use it as a form of identity. You can still use it to walk across the port border rather than the actual checkpoint. So if you've got foreign agents down in Mexico acquiring U.S. identities, likelihood is they're going to figure out a way to cross the border. They may do so pseudo-legally, and if they do it illegally, once they're in the country, they have mobility. It's a very serious issue, and I suspect that it's been happening for a while.
Is there anything we can do to fight this?
Well, not if you want to maintain an open, democratic society. What you have to do is you have to shut down the borders, okay? You have to stop...
Physically.
You have to actually put some physical limitations. And I'm not talking just a fence. I mean, you have to stop the traffic across the borders.
Yeah.
And then you have to have the appropriate checking systems to make sure you are who you are, to authenticate that you are a U.S. citizen or resident, you're allowed to be here, or you have an active visa or whatnot. You know, you're hearing a lot of this in the Republican debates and such, and I don't think they're off base on that. You have some very bad people crossing the border, and you don't know what that's going to do in the future.
No, you really don't. So as you look at all of this, Andrew, what would you say in terms of technology and cyber could be our biggest issue, our biggest problem? Is it the possibility of these cyber attacks?
Well, I would say there's probably three areas of our major weakness. Most of our electrical grid, power subsystems, water distribution, waste disposal systems, even the lights in our cities, okay, are all run remotely. Railroads are run remotely. So you have these SCADA systems, which are supervisory control systems, to allow people in a central switchboard to control at a distance lots of different systems. Those are basically digital control systems, and they can be accessed remotely and or physically. And they can be disrupted or destroyed, and then suddenly you have half a state in the dark for 3 or 4 days. You have a wastewater system suddenly reverse the pumps. And by the way, that happened in Australia. Some kid hacked in.
And somebody tried to hack into the water system in Springfield, Illinois a few months ago, didn't they?
Well, the people are trying to hack in all the time. It's not just... you know, last month or the month before, we're getting literally thousands of attacks on all kinds of our infrastructure from all over the world, internal and external, okay? And it's not being reported because it's commonplace. And that's the truth of it. Now, until something actually happens, it won't get red flagged. And, you know, how are you going to stop, say, a million remote control computers from attacking? Are you going to blow up a million individual PCs?
That's not going to happen.
You know, but guess what? We're developing weapons to allow that. A colleague of mine did consulting with the DOD where they actually came up with a program. This was probably 5 years ago, where they came up with a program that once you found out where the computer was attacking you from, you could then send something to the computer that would make the computer melt down.
Literally.
It would just kind of blow itself up.
That's amazing.
Okay. Well, that's a defense mechanism. Now, are you going, you know, how would you like to be on a radio show using your laptop? You don't know your laptop's attacking somebody in the DOD and watch it melt down.
Right in front of them.
you know, but these are the types of things and technologies that we're actually developing.
Well, but it's smart. You really need to for a defense, don't you?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we may be our own worst enemy on this, okay?
How so?
Because, you know, I an eye for an eye, right?
Yeah.
The problem with that is everybody ends up blind. If you really, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Well, that's true.
Until we actually secure our infrastructure, we actually have a unified effort towards this goal. You don't want to go picking a fight because we're too dependent on this.
But there's always going to be some bad apple out there, Andrew, that's going to do something like this.
Well, yeah, but you know what? The 1% factor out there, the crazy people, you know, if you've got 1% of Americans, 300 million, that's still 3 million crazy people. If you have, you know, 6 billion people, 1% of that, okay, you're always going to have the crazy people. You just can't help yourself.
No,
with that.
You can't.
But what you can do is you can actually have an adult conversation about how you want to deal with this instead of be on a reactive basis, which is what most of our efforts have been.
Is there an internet kill switch right now?
I honestly don't know, but I do know that there was a bill in Congress that would grant the president the ability to shut the internet off as they did in Egypt. They just turned it off. Now, I wonder what the Russian people would think about that when that coup occurred, and it was the internet that prevented the military from taking over Russia. That's really, you know, again, is that really the solution that we're looking for? Let's just turn the internet off. That's how we're going to protect ourselves.
Well, for free people, absolutely not. But for those in power, they would love to have that as a tool.
Absolutely. Now, am I saying that we shouldn't have the ability to isolate our traffic at the border? Ooh, that may be a potential, okay? Because if we're being attacked from, say, Mexico or Venezuela or wherever, okay, maybe we do want to be able to stop the traffic at the border. And a lot of the internet infrastructure people have that ability, okay, which is why they're now moving closer to the border.
Do you think, Andrew, that when the internet was being developed years ago under DARPA first, did anybody think about this and think about what the future ramifications could be with this?
Well, the concept of information warfare and cyber warfare has been around since probably the early 90s. Okay, there was some discussions in the mid 80s. And then there were some books in the mid-90s. But no, I don't think when they developed ARPANET, they went, hey, we're one big happy world. It's okay, we're going to share this with the world, and we'll all be able to talk.
And
what a wonderful thing this will be.
Little did they know. Give us your websites, Andrew.
My website is andrewkalerick.com. And, you know, I do actually return phone calls and emails, so feel free. And I'm happy to take questions and such from your listeners. I enjoy this stuff. And by the way, George, I just want to say, you know, about 6 years ago, you guys were some of the first to allow me to have this venue, to talk about this, to bring it to importance. And for that, I am very grateful.
Well, you are one of a kind, Andrew, believe me. And your website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we shall be back with Andrew Kalerick, and we'll take phone calls. So get ready. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, with a split show tonight, we're going to take phone calls now with Andrew Kalerick. Technology, cyber attacks, you name it, fire away. And we'll be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew, should this country have that one person like a Secretary of Defense or, you know, of the Treasury Department, one person who's like the Secretary of Cyber, something like that?
I actually kind of disagree with trying to centralize the control of cyber, because it's kind of like saying we need a secretary of roads. Okay, there are lots of different roads and bridges and so forth, so on, and but we need one guy in charge of them all.
Well, that would be a good idea in L.A.
Well, yeah, well, that would definitely get some potholes filled. But my whole personal opinion about how you take care of this is you actually have to have a national discussion. You actually have to bring all the stakeholders together in a unified effort to create some kind of a national cyber doctrine for defending that infrastructure. It shouldn't just be the government or the military. It shouldn't just be the biggest of the businesses. It should be a whole understanding by the American people that says, hey, listen, here's the rules. Here's how we want to govern this. This is what our responsibilities are if we're going to participate. And here's the latitude that we think we need in order to have a free society. I think what it requires is kind of a presidential leadership to get this type of a thing going. But it shouldn't be controlled by the president. It should be a top, down, and bottom-up process, in my opinion.
You have said that we are our own worst enemy. What do you mean by that?
Well, often we react to things. Then we have to act on that reaction, and then we just escalate it and make it worse. Often we don't, you know, if somebody comes up and punches you in the nose, you know, you fall down, you get up. Well, the first instinct is to punch them right back. Okay, and hey, you know, I'm all about that. just like most other people. But the first thing you do is you consider the situation. Doesn't mean you're not going to hit them back, but how do you hit them back? What's the reason to hit them back? Is it to teach them not to hit you? There's lots of ways to teach that. And it doesn't mean being passive and all that, you know. So this isn't a polarity kind of a concept. What I'm saying is often we will react and then we will take action. And then we'll think about, well, we could have done it better this way.
Exactly.
And when you have something like cyberspace, which is so integral to everything we're doing, you take the wrong escalation and you're going to create a problem that is going to not only affect you, not only your organization, but all of us. And that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, you have to kind of be the adult in the room, you know?
Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Tom to get things going in Riverside, California. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I appreciate you taking the call. And I'd like to ask your guest, Andrew, about these new UAVs that the FAA has been getting regulations ready for next year to let the police departments all across this country start the process of getting new toys that they want to play with, and then, of course, they'll have to upgrade them and all that. And I really, as an American, that should be a flash. This should be a flashpoint for everybody across this country. I can't believe that that's happening, that they're going to put predators over the major cities of this country.
They're already doing it. The couple in Dakotas, they got nailed because they kept some cows that wandered onto their farmland.
Yeah, there's been two articles in the L.A. Times in the last three Sundays on UAVs and what they're going to do with these. And I've been reading about it for the last 2 years. A few other things is they're developing mini missiles to put on these predators, maybe not for the United States, but still they'll apply these things as they come up. And, of course, we'll have to – what's broke this country is all the secret money that's been spent by the Defense Department going over and doing dirty little deeds like your guest Andrew's talking about. If you start this in cyberspace, you're going to then, you know, tit for tat, and we've been doing this with the wars over there, which should have never been started to begin with. But we're going to end up in this with, and as far as I'm concerned, we should take a policy when you're talking about, oh, well, how can we protect ourselves from Mexico, you know, the Iranians and all these people coming in from Mexico and all that stuff. I'd just say, just take the attitude that, because there's, if it was going to happen, I mean, if they really were after that, they could have done it already, it seems to me. But in the future, it will happen if they want to do it bad enough. I think we should take the attitude of just letting it go where it's going to go. And then we're a big enough country. If we need to do something, we'll do it. But let's don't go keep going back and forth with dirty little tricks and egging on. You know, we're painting ourselves into a corner. But as far as the UAVs, I think the American people should right now, before this starts, because that's going to be, it's going to be Big Brother, you know, like you ain't never seen before.
And who makes these? Do we know, Andrew and Tom, who makes these Predator drones? I wonder if there's any collusion involved here.
Well, I don't know if it's collusion, but I think there is some political collaboration going on. Maybe a little crony capitalism, maybe some backdoor room deals, you know, and then the rest of us have to pay for it and live with it. Here's what I would say, okay, because, you know, I don't want to alienate the universe that wants to create, you know, these types of vehicles and such. And I don't want to alienate people who go, you know, we don't want to be watched by these, okay, so... I'm gonna try the impossible. I'm gonna try to make everybody happy with what I'm about to say.
That's not gonna happen. But
yeah,
give it
yeah,
your best
I'm gonna
shot.
Get huh? Shot so bad, I know. But you know what? You know, some of us like to tilt at windmills. In any event, here's what I would suggest. First of all, California's bankrupt. Okay, it's bankrupt. I'm sorry. It has to get its fiscal house in order before it does something this silly. Okay.
Yep.
That's number one. Let's just look at it from a top down level. Number two, if you're going to be surveilling people with these drones, okay, unless you can actually explain its real purpose, you know, you have helicopters already. The helicopters come out and chase somebody who tries to flee. So are you replacing the helicopters with the drones? Now, that might be a cost savings, but how many drones do you need? Okay, so we don't have answers to these questions. This is, you know, we're just going to do it, and we'll start it off as a pilot program, and then we're going to increase the budgets, and that, I mean, it's the same routine, okay? So step one, can you really afford to do this? Step two, what is the actual rationale behind it? Step three, don't you think your citizens should have a voice in this? Shouldn't it show up on a ballot that says we want spy drones flying around above us? Okay, I mean, yes. That's
too logical, Andrew.
Well, you know, and that's why I'm always shot. You know, it's it destroys everybody's self-interest and walks right into enlightened self-interest. You know, I mean, heaven forbid we actually be rational in our governance and what we want as a free society. And I'm not being radical. I think you need to have certain controls in place, and I think you need to have certain police functions and so forth. Law enforcement does a very, very difficult job. They have a limited number of resources, even though they spend a lot, over a very large geographic area. And they're outnumbered. So, you know, you want to help them, but at the same time, you want to preserve people's independence and ability to live without being bothered.
How much do these predators cost per unit, do you know?
I don't know the cost, but I'm sure that they're going to be, if it's in a mass commercial version, probably $50,000-$60,000 a piece?
At least, I would think. And then somebody's got to operate the thing, right?
And you have to be trained to operate them, and you have to have a facility to land them and store them, and maintenance. And
you know what's going to happen. It's going to crash into somebody's house one day and kill a family.
Well, and you know what? I think you can probably put that up, and the Guinness Book of World Records is the first to say it.
Yep. Let's go now to Jerry in Anchorage, Alaska. It's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Jerry. Thank you.
Hi. I was just wanting to comment that I think that it's quite possible that this whole drone thing could, in fact, just be a full-fledged inside job by our government. That it
well,
could,
I got a call from somebody from overseas last week. And he said, and he's in the military, he claimed to be, and he claims that it was a government inside job in order to, you know, let the Iranians get it. And then, you know, the prelude of an attack on them after they do something with it. I don't know. Andrew, what do you think?
I think that what you have is a military command structure that is continually being bypassed by a civilian White House. Okay, I think what you have are policymakers who are not on the ground interfering with military operations in a way that is creating these kind of dysfunctionalities. Because if you had left this to the military commanders on the ground, that drone would have been destroyed. That I have no doubt in.
No, I agree with that. Jerry, thanks for your call. We've got Will in Madison, Wisconsin. Take it away. Hi, Will.
Hi. About a month, 2 months ago, you had a guest who spoke about a rogue fourth power in the USA. They are in the CIA. They print badges, papers, Federal Reserve notes, other departments, printed by the Treasury, actually. And I wonder if these people, this rogue fourth power, are part of the mentally deranged, which your guest has mentioned, the 1%ers, maybe the 0.1%ers that are in the bank holding corporations and are running our country and having, so to speak, a fourth power, rogue fourth power, control of all of America and trying to get control of all of the world. I wonder if he or your guest is willing to agree with the possibility that these extremely uber rich are in fact doing some sort of cyber war upon we the people.
Good How question.
Well,
go ahead, Andrew.
That's an interesting question. The wealthy whom I have met, I would not say are very savvy in this area. In fact, I would say they have a lot to learn about this area. They are very good at delegating things. Now, beyond that, the only thing I could say is wait until I'm a billionaire, which may be never, and then I'll associate with those folks and I'll find out for you. But I think that the wealthy are more preoccupied with sustaining their position and their wealth and moving their agendas forward, whatever those agendas may be. And I also think that, like us, those agendas are diverse. I don't think they're unified. I think they fight amongst themselves at a different level, and they compete with each other. And often we are, we're on a chessboard and we're the pieces. So whatever those endeavors are, you know, I wish them well, so to speak. But in the end, those folks cannot operate without the rest of us.
Cyber technologically speaking, where would you put the United States compared to like Russia, India, Pakistan, China?
On a technological level, our infrastructure is so much better than theirs.
Is it? Okay.
But on a skill level, the Russians and the Chinese have some very, very smart, talented people who are encouraged to perfect their craft.
They're pushed that way, aren't they?
I think they are. They are not punished when they exceed the parameters. Let's put it that way.
Let's go next to Dan in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. My question is simple. I just was wondering if encrypting the telemetry from these predator drones would be effective. You mentioned that there was one upsmanship that was going on constantly, but the encryption is quite often very, very difficult to break, and I just wondered if you could comment on that.
Well, I'm pretty sure that they're going to have some form of encryption in the communication between their home base and the drone. Okay, and again, I haven't taken one of these things apart. I'm just going on basic electronics and so forth of my understanding. However, the radio signals themselves can be jammed. The radio signals themselves can be disrupted, and they can be confused. Okay, and so that then opens it up. So it's no different than, say, a server that gets a denial of service attack causes the processor of the server to go, oh, I can't do anything anymore, and then suddenly you can access the system. So it's the same type of approach. The other thing is I don't know, even if they're military-grade GPS units, I don't know if you can actually fix that vulnerability because of proximity.
That's right.
You have a stronger signal so if the drone is out there, you know, miles away, and you're within feet, and you're broadcasting at it, you're going to have a higher intensity. You're going to be able to override that process. And the fact that they now have a drone in possession gives them more of the pieces of the puzzle to actually hijack these things in the future.
If they hijacked the drone, and if it wasn't in Iranian airspace, is that an act of war with what they did, even though, as you say, they've been doing this since 79?
Well, that's part of the problem. We actually have not made a determination as to what becomes an act of war when it comes to cyber. Okay, that's part of that national discussion that has to occur. If you don't clearly identify the line between cyber war and real war, okay, where people die or facilities are destroyed, if you don't know where those lines are and you don't have a set of parameters that establish escalation policy, so you destroy our national grid, we respond with this level in response.
Andrew, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're going to talk about ancient UFOs with Marshall Clairfeld, so make sure you're part of that program. And when we come back in just a moment with Andrew Kolarik, we're going to take final phone calls as we talk about cyber wars on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew, in terms of technology, what's out there now? We've had the smartphones, we've had the iPads. What's left?
Well, what you're going to see is the continued extension of all these types of gadgets getting smaller and smaller with greater capacity. So, for instance, there's going to be a lighted keyboard. So you'll put your phone down on a table, you'll press a button, a light will project a keyboard right on your table. So you could type, and it will pick up your finger strokes.
Amazing.
You're going to see data interface to these systems. So let's say you're in the grocery store and you want to find, you find Charmin toilet paper, for instance. You could, with a couple presses of a button, find out what the product reviews are by just simply scanning the barcode of that product. You're going to find more and more of this integrated database and technology integrated into our daily processes. And it won't stop there.
Will we have one day, for example, when you want to make a phone call to a friend, a hologram that will pop up and your friend will be a little tiny hologram walking around on the top of your desk, whatever they might be doing back in their house, you'll see it in real time?
I got to believe that as visual systems and laser systems get more sophisticated, you're going to see the kind of hologram, holodeck type of things. You actually have at some airports kind of a holographic projection greeter that gives you directions, go this way, go that way, that you can interface a little bit with. You have technologies like where you walk into this kind of a examination room and it scans your body, and then it tells you what size your clothes are, prints it all out, and then you go shopping with this list, and they can get you the perfect fit. You're just going to see more and more of this type of heavily integrated technology into daily process.
How would you grade us on an A through E scale in terms of the use of our cyber technology?
I would probably put us at about a B.
A B? Not bad?
We're a little slow to do it, but once we adopt it, we embrace it pretty fully. I would put folks like the Japanese up in the A's. There's other, countries that, are A-, B-pluses, Germany and so forth. The Koreans are just spectacular with every kind of gadget on the planet. They're taking notes from the Japanese on that, I think. But once America absorbs a technology, we make it our own. Okay, and we literally, it's like a child with a hammer. Everything becomes a nail. We figure out something else to hit with it.
All right, back to the phones we go. Dwight, first-time caller, Houston, Texas. Hey, Dwight, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Okay, Dwight, thank you.
Good. I was just wondering, your guest there, I think the reason why they might be using these drones could be, they've had this problem with the Mexican cartels, whatever, trafficking humans as well as drugs in this country, that could be one of the reasons they're using the drones also. I mean, it could be any number of reasons.
Well, I think that's a valid point. But up here in Los Angeles, we don't, that's not really the main focus. If you put the drones down on the border, absolutely. I don't have any problem with that. But that's really not
the intent.
I'm not sure if that's the intent or not, but it seems to me that their geography is off, if that is the intent.
Look, when the sheriff used it with the family that had some cows that wandered onto their farmland and they kept the cows, but he used the drones to go spy or do whatever he had to do, that's nuts. What happened to the old days where a sheriff car would show up and say, these things wandered onto your land, can we get it back? Let's go to James in Kansas City, Kansas. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, first off, I had a question and then a comment about the drones. I'm just curious why there wasn't a self-destruct package on that drone we had that supposedly got lost over Iran.
Well, that's a good question. Maybe they did have one, but they just didn't implement it. What do you think, Andrew?
Well,
again, like the old Mission Impossible tapes,
well,
the self-destruct.
All right, let's assume that they do have a self-destruct on it, okay? How do you get the drone to self-destruct if you're overriding the airwaves? If your controls and your signals are being jammed or overridden with a stronger force?
Okay, so they literally just took over.
Well,
it wasn't like we were fighting and they were fighting.
They may have blocked the path, the actual control path waves.
And took it.
And then as a result, you press the button and it doesn't blow up. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, they may have other means to destroy that. They do have satellite tracking and so forth, so on. They could have gone in and taken it out. Early on, there's lots of different scenarios and contingencies that I'm sure that people much smarter than me have worked through. As I said before, I think this is a miscommunication or a poor judgment in civilian oversight. And I think if you had left it in the hands of the military, it would have been destroyed by whatever means.
Was this a CIA drone?
That I don't know.
I bet it was. Just assuming, but I bet it probably was. Did you ever play with model planes when you were a kid? The remote control thing?
All the time.
If somebody had your frequency, they could literally take over if they had a more powerful transmitter, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a little how this probably worked. Would they ever be able to take over commercial aircraft the same way?
Well, no. The commercial aircraft are not controlled remotely. Okay. The commercial aircraft is controlled in the cockpit. Even if it's autopilot, that's still local control.
Okay.
That's the difference. But unmanned planes, absolutely.
Let's go to John in Los Angeles. Take it away. Hi, John.
Hey, George. Say, a little info on that thing out in North Dakota. It was in Nelson County, which is right next to Grand Forks Air Force Base. The sheriff went out there to see where the cows were. Well, he went up to the landowner, and the landowner and a couple of his family members pulled loaded firearms on the sheriff, and the sheriff backed away and left and then used the drone for evidence to get a search warrant stating that, hey, they are on his land. So he ended up calling the North Dakota Highway Patrol, neighboring counties for backup, and also a SWAT team. And when they, you know, went to arrest the people, actually, I think what I read was one of the family members assaulted one of the SWAT team members. So, and plus these guys that were the family members, they're anti-government people. So they didn't want nobody. So they fought till the end. No shots were fired, but
yeah, that's a good thing.
Well, the question that I would ask, and again, I'm not taking sides. Okay, just understand that clearly. Is why not use the domestic satellite systems that we have already in place? You could easily get a picture through that process. Okay, what you use through Google Earth and so forth isn't the same grade, but law enforcement has access to much better systems, and they could have simply done a search through the satellite and found the evidence that they wanted at that point.
Maybe they like the publicity, Andrew. Maybe they like the fact that, you know, they've got the media now talking about this thing.
Well, if we talk about it enough, it'll become commonplace and then suddenly acceptable. Maybe that's their approach.
That could be. Let's go to Boston. Joe's up. Hey, Joe, welcome.
Hey, George. I'm going to give you my condolences about your dad.
Thank you, Joe.
So sad. This is the worst time of the year for those things to happen.
It's never a good time.
Yeah, and welcome you, Andrew, and all the Coast to Coast listeners. I have a couple questions, quick ones. Do you think this will bring us closer to World War III? That's my first question. I want to ask the other one before I go. Do you think that they'll have remote control planes with passengers? Because my brother, last I spoke with him, he said he lands overseas and they have full auto landing. So there's no reason they can't put that in. If someone were to hijack a plane, the captain could arm a system and the remote would take over in the air controllers. What's your comment on that? I'm interested. This is a great topic. George, okay. One thing, do more shows on bad medicine. We just lost a couple friends up here in Boston due to bad medicine.
It's not good. Okay, first of all, World War III. Can it be done because of cyber?
I think if you have a reactionary perspective, it could provoke an escalation that could then get out of hand. And again, I keep going back to that's why we need a national doctrine. And that doctrine can't be hidden. It has to be in the open, okay? Much like, nuclear war. You know, Eisenhower created a doctrine that said, you know, you launch, we're all dead, okay? Everybody knows the rules, so now you haven't had any of them launched. I don't think anything that drastic needs to occur in the cyber realm, but you know, if we lay that type of thing out, then you're not going to lead to crazy escalation. But as it stands now, You know, what if a third of the U.S.'s electrical grid went down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or there's an MP3 pulse attack or something.
Right, and which would completely, you know, annihilate all the electronics. And now you have a third world country overnight for a large chunk of the U.S. That would be grounds to retaliate. And let's say that originated from, say, China. Okay. Are the American people going to just go, nah, you know what, let's just go placate and negotiate? No, they're going to be out for blood. You know, especially since if the power grid goes down, you'll have hospitals, you'll have all kinds of other infrastructure that can no longer do their job. So people are going to be dying. And imagine if you did it on, say, the hottest day of the year or the coldest day of the year in a certain region, on and on. So if it's crafted in the right time, it could lead to a major conflict that the politicians wouldn't be able to negotiate their way out of. Otherwise, we'd just sack them. So that's the first question.
Now, and the other one was, I don't think you would agree with allowing air traffic control to take over a plane, would you?
I don't want to speak ill of people who helped me land safely, but there have been reports of them sleeping. There have been reports of them not being able to land planes, two of them on the same airstrip, so forth and so on. I mean, air traffic controllers are as prone to error as anyone else. And now to let them land a plane, I would rather pay a little bit more for my ticket and have a qualified pilot, even if he's just lounging in the cockpit.
And co-pilot.
Well, co-pilot would help too. You know, I mean, we are a cost-conscious society now. Yep. And, you know, but I'm not sure I would feel comfortable, even given all of the technologies. Of somebody outside the plane taking control of it, because that just opens up a whole nother can of worms for malicious attacks.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Darren's with us in Bakersfield, California. Hi, Darren.
Hello. I'm a technician for the Army's Unmanned program.
Okay.
I just stopped doing it, but one of the things I'd like to add is that with unmanned aerial vehicles, when you lose communication with it, generally they have pre-programmed destinations. In fact, we lost an aircraft in Iran years ago because they had set the return home to Arizona, and the aircraft was being flown out of Iraq. And when it lost communications, it started flying towards Arizona and ended up crashing somewhere near in Iran. So, I mean, generally, it's not very common for them to be able to take over or take control of the aircraft itself.
The fact that they probably did this, what does this tell you, Darren?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I've never worked with that particular model. I've never even seen that one, you know, that they've lost over there. But, I mean, they're pretty advanced as it goes. So, I mean, you have to have some pretty advanced equipment to be able to hijack something like that.
Absolutely. And here's a question for you there, Andrew. Where did they get the equipment? If the Iranians indeed took over this drone, somebody had to have helped them.
Well,
Chinese?
The answer to that would be, I mean, I don't have the definitive answer, but the answer to that is very simple. Who would gain from having access to that drone in one piece?
Chinese and Russians.
Chinese and Russians. And the Chinese and the Russians are very smart people on this, and they'd love to reverse engineer one of those drones, and I think that's where the discussion kind of is going to go over and over again. I mean, we have global competitors in this arena.
Next up, we go to Albert in Cleveland, Ohio. Squeeze you in here, Albert. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a quick question to your guest. With the weapons that Iran would possibly acquire from getting that downed drone, what are the possibilities of them trying to attack Israel? And if so, would Israel possibly retaliate and cause like a third world war scenario, mm-hmm. or escalated scenario like that?
Well, yeah, will they try to fly this thing, Andrew, and use it as a weapon? Maybe equip it with a bomb, a missile?
Well, I don't think they're going to use that particular drone again because they don't have all the control systems. I mean, okay. They could maybe gut it and rework it. But that, I think, would probably be more unlikely. What they could do is create a less sophisticated drone, advance their own stealth drone program as a result. And then, yeah, they could be flying these things in, and they could put a payload on them, and they could be crashing them or simply attacking Israel and fly them home or fly them to some other base. They could equip one of their proxies with it. It could end up in, say, Palestine. It could be in Syria, so forth, so on. Because, you know, these things have pretty good range.
Okay, they do. Andrew, we're out of time. I want to thank you. Let's get your website out one more time for us. Go ahead.
Yep, my website is Andrew Kolarik. That's AndrewKolarik.com. And, George, it's a pleasure as always.
Always.
And appreciate the time.
Okay. Andrew Kolarik, very good. Informational, great source here at Coast to Coast AM.